welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast, brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. This one's for February 27th. Wow. We're coming up on the season. I'm John Gibson, and with me as usual is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
I'm just here chuckling in the background and trying to do something positive.
Chuckling and not Jimmin? I thought your name was Jim. When are you going to change your name to Chuck?
Anytime you want. I'm flexible.
And there's more chuckling.
Yep.
You're flexible. I don't need to know these things. We've got an interview with a former pitcher, Jeremy Powell. We're going to discuss the four new skippers and a rule change. So let's start by clearing the bases. First, I want to give a shout-out to Suichi. Get well soon. Yeah, she's going under the knife today, so my Suichi. And hopefully she'll be back home soon at the end of the week.
Yeah, we love you, and get well soon.
All right, so I talked to Jeremy Powell, the former Osaka Kinsetsu Buffaloes, post-merger Oryx Buffaloes, Yomiuri Giants, Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks pitcher.
Got it, man. That's harder than the intro.
Whew. I got through it, though. I got through it, though. He's back in the States. He's got a gig with the Miami Marlins. He's going to be the pitching coach for the rookie ball.
Whoa.
Rookie ball level, like really, you know, 18, 17. Well, I graduated high school at 17, but not everybody does it. So 18, 19, 20 guys
not,
right.
We're not all as precocious as you were, John Gibson.
I bet you say that to all the guys.
No, in fact, I avoid talking to all the guys. The thing about the rookie ball is kind of funny is they basically play before nobody. They play in these spring training facilities before people who walk up and watch behind the cyclone fence.
Yeah, not even friends and family is what you're saying.
Yeah, not even. It's like the X-League. they wish they were playing in the X-League.
Maybe they can have company employees of the sponsors come out and watch the games. Be told to come out and watch the games, I guess.
Something like that.
Jeremy won. What did he win? He won double figures four times over eight seasons in Japan. He's just another one of the great guys who ended up, you know, with the Giants, and we got to talk to him a lot, actually. Ended up disappearing from Japan when he went to SoftBank Hawks. I hardly remembered that he was there.
That was a tumultuous reappearance in Japan because he was out of contract with the Giants, and he was on the verge of accepting a contract to go to Oryx, but it just never got done.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't keep Oryx from saying they had agreed to a deal with him. When they didn't,
mm-hmm.
And doing some sort of trying to pull a couple of fast ones as soon as SoftBank signed him.
Yeah, I have big memories of that issue. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was.
He never did anything with SoftBank, so it really didn't matter. But it didn't. There was a lot of nastiness involved, and it was sort of like in most of the papers. It was sort of like, well, it's because he's a foreigner that these kind of evil things happen because foreigners can't be trusted. And, and the truth is, I did a column about it, and if you look at it, the truth is that these things happened all the time when players were free, especially when amateur players were free to sign with anybody they wanted, that they would sign multiple contracts. And I believe, a number of players have done this. So it's just something that's new that's more or less hasn't happened to Japanese players, but it used to be the norm. But as you know, anything that's, if it happened to a foreigner, it's because he's evil and not to be trusted.
You only trust him as far as you can whack him with a bat.
Well, that might not be as far this year as it was last year.
Yeah, the low-impact foreigners, huh? Well, I have a funny story about JP. When he became a Giant in I think it was 2006, he came over and won his first six starts, and he was on the verge of throwing three straight shutouts. And I think after the third shutout, he didn't get the shutout, but after the third game, I did an interview with him, but we didn't run it right away. We held on to it maybe a week or so or 10 days or so.
Right.
And our resident Giants fan... apparently Jeremy did, didn't win very many games after. I think he won three.
I think he won one more, and he won two more at the end of the season and finished 500 after starting 6-0.
Yeah, he did finish 500. I interviewed him, and I have the story here, so I checked it. He was 6-2.
Okay.
By the time the story went in. So I think he had, lost a couple after I did the interview. He's 6-0 when I did the interview, so he lost a couple. But he ended the season 10-10.
Okay.
And meanwhile, the resident Giants fan looked at me and says, "Hey, don't you interview any more Giants and ruin their careers." He was blaming me for jinxing JP. He called me the career killer. It was. He just told me, stop interviewing Giants. It was all in jest, obviously. I mean,
we've all done it. We've all had those. And I interviewed, I just killed Kenjiro Kawasaki's career. He never won again.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, he went to my Dragons. He was like a piece of
spring training.
They used to call him the Kyudo Dorobo. What is that?
Yeah, the
salary thief.
There's a few of those in Japan. And who else's career did I kill? I think
money for that. I thought Tuffy didn't want to see you because whenever you came to games, they lost. Was it Tuffy or was it another foreign player?
That's Michael Nakamura. He's now with the Lions. We'll get to see him all the time.
No, that was also Michael. But he said, yeah, Michael Nakamura said whenever he talked to you, he had bad luck. It was nothing personal.
It wasn't straight away, but it was like what happened was I happened to be up there when he was trying to set the Pacific League saves record with the Fighters, and it's just like every game I was there he blew the save. Well, for about three games and he gave up. And Tuffy actually thought I was trying to jinx him for a while, and so he wouldn't talk to me during the 2001 Japan series.
Well, I know
he got over that eventually.
Eventually, it takes time. Well, Jeremy didn't seem to bear any hard feelings, so let's take a listen to the interview. All right, I'm joined here with Jeremy Powell. How's it going, buddy? It's good to talk to you again.
It's going good. How you doing, John?
I'm doing all right. Now, you pitched with the Kintetsu Buffaloes, or it was the Osaka Kintetsu Buffaloes when you pitched there. And then you went to the Giants. And then, I think that's true, and then you went to the Yomiuri Giants from there. You went to the SoftBank Hawks. Is that right?
I was with the Kintetsu Buffaloes, and then they merged and became the Oryx Buffaloes. But yes, I was with the Buffaloes for 5 years.
And then
there, and then the Giants, and then the Hawks. Yeah.
All right. Now, what was it like moving to the Giants as a free agent? I mean, we've seen a lot of people go there and struggle, or I don't know, have trouble dealing with the pressures and all that. Was it difficult dealing with the pressures, or was it intense, or what was it like?
It was a little intense. The Giants have a huge following. They're the Kyojin. They're the team that everybody loves. They might be a fan of the Buffaloes or a fan of the Blue Wave or the fan of the Lions, but deep down, I think everybody follows the Giants too. So we did have a huge following, and the pressure to win there was definitely a lot more. But I enjoyed it. I mean, I loved it. I loved pitching over there. I love the competition. One of the things I tell people about pitching over there was it was great because it was all about winning, regardless of what team you played on. But
right.
But definitely, being with the Giants, they have a huge fan base, a huge following, and the media is, the Giants are covered, really heavily. So, it's the pressure to win it is definitely, more.
Now, I mean, compared to other teams, what was different about the Giants in terms of just the organization itself?
They really put a lot of weight, in how you carried yourself, how you were on and off the field, representing the Giants, and that was a big thing, to leave your apartment and make sure that, you're representing the Tokyo Giants and you've got to carry yourself as such and everything is just under the microscope, a lot more. So, you've got to be cognizant of that on and off the field and that type of thing. So, you had to really carry yourself as a true professional, everywhere.
What were some of the most impactful or interesting instances during your time in Japan?
I would say, the biggest impact for me was just how they want to win. I mean, it's just real competitive. you know, they're all about winning. And, you know, the biggest thing for me was that, you know, everybody works hard. There is no ego there. And as long as you're helping them win, you know, that's really all that matters. You know, at the end of the day, it's all about winning. And you know, the thing that I loved the most was that it didn't matter who you were. If you weren't performing, you were sent down. If you weren't performing, you were not playing. And, you know, the culture of baseball over there was all about incentive. And, you know, if you did well, you know, you were the man. And if you didn't do well, you know, there was the extreme. There's the extreme everywhere you go. When you do good, everybody likes you. When you do bad, you know, nobody likes you. But in
right.
Japan, like, those extremes were, you know, extra. When you did well, you know, it was great and everybody loved you. And when you did bad, you know, it was, you know, you were kind of a goat. So, you know, you really had to make sure you were on top of your game. And you know, but like I said, you know, everybody worked hard, you know, everybody, there was no egos and everybody played hard and worked hard and you know, just was great.
Now, I understand you're going to be taking over a position with the Miami Marlins this year, as the rookie ball pitching coach.
That's right.
Now, how did you come into that gig and how are you approaching it?
Well, you know, I finished playing in 2010, and I was playing in Triple A, and I finished playing, and I knew I wanted to coach. I knew I wanted to coach, but at the time that I decided to stop playing, you know, everybody was pretty filled up, so I had to spend the last year, you know, kind of at home, you know, and just kind of hanging out and networking and trying to keep up contact. But it was great for me because it gave me a year of time with my family. But, you know, I started networking out, sent my resumes out everywhere. And, you know, in the game of baseball, you know, the baseball world is such a small world. And so I had some contacts of people that I knew that I've, you know, crossed paths with along the way in my career. And, you know, I made a phone call and the timing was great. You know, the Marlins had an opening coming up and, you know, I knew some of the people in the organization and, you know, had some conversation on the phone and then everything worked out great and they offered me the job and of course I took it and, you know, so, you know, I'll be taking over the entry level rookie ball, you know, team, which is basically the first step of the way as soon as you get into pro ball.
Right. The butt, you know, the wet behind the ears, butt rookies.
Exactly. You know, and the thing about it is in my career, I went through every level. You know, I wasn't a guy that, you know, was on the fast track to the major league. You know, I was a prospect, but I had to go through every level, and I went through the rookie ball season, you know, and so for me, you know, the fact that I'm not far removed, you know, as a player, you know, I feel like I can relate to these guys,
uh-huh.
you know, really well, you know, because I've been there, done that, and, you know, the biggest thing for me in approaching this job is, you know, I look forward to helping these guys out, you know, more so mentally. I think one of the things that I stressed when I did interviews was, you know, I'm looking forward to helping these guys be better mentally
mm-hmm.
and get them mentally tougher and mentally ready to move up more so than physically because the economics of the game are pushing these kids, you know, to the upper levels and even to the big leagues.
Certainly, yeah.
You know, a lot sooner nowadays. So,
especially if they flash some talent, some real talent out there, some raw talent too.
You know, exactly. And I think that they don't understand, you know, how close they really are physically, you know, even at 18, 19, 20 years old, you know, at the rookie ball level or the A ball level, you know, they're not far off. You know, but where they're gonna stumble or where they're gonna succeed is how they're gonna be mentally. You know, dealing with failure and dealing with you know, the off the field things and dealing with all the stuff outside of competition that they've got to deal with. And so for me to be able to kind of attack that angle and try to at least get their head in the right spot, you know, on and off the field, it'll give them a chance. You know, it'll give them a chance to deal with the failure and get past that, you know, because a lot of these kids haven't dealt with failure yet because they're so physically talented. So, you know, and you know, once you get into pro ball, that's going to get in there. You're going to have a little bit of failure. You know,
right.
There haven't been too many guys that have gotten to the top of the game without some failure, and it's how you react and how you respond. So I think that's kind of the angle that I want to pursue.
Well, I mean, tell me now, are there some things that you learned while you were playing in Japan that you can teach these guys?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. You know, I think, you know, the biggest thing for me from the pitching aspect is, you know, in the States, they stress fastball command and they stress being aggressive with the fastball because the guys here, you know, have good arms. I mean, I've had a couple days now where I've watched guys throw and, you know, these guys are throwing, it's electric. I mean, these guys are all throwing in the 90s, you know, the mid 90s. And so everybody stresses that fastball aggressiveness. And I think, you know, the thing for me, the thing that I tell people about Japan was, is in a lot of respects, it was tougher to pitch there because of the way they hit, the way they teach hitting, and they hit on the defensive. And, you know, for me, it was about being able to throw my secondary pitches for strikes, you know, when I was behind in the count. Mm-hmm. That really be effective. And, you know, anybody that I know that goes makes the jump to Japan, I tell them, you know, hey, you know, when you get into fastball counts, you've got to learn to throw your secondary pitches for strikes. You know, at the end of the day, you become a better pitcher because you learn about your secondary pitches. You learn about your breaking ball and what you can do with it. And, you know, and for me, I really didn't know how to pitch until I was in Japan for a couple of years. And then I was able to, you know, use my curveball, you know, when I needed to in a fastball count. Whereas coming up through the minor leagues as a player, when I got into a fastball count, I threw a fastball. You know, so you can't do that in Japan. You know, for me, the hitters they have such good bat control, and, you know, they swing so much, they make contact a lot, you know. And so, you know, you really got to learn how to kind of pitch the way they pitch over there.
Yeah, I made the mistake of saying to Jim in a earlier podcast that the fastball count in Japan, and he stopped me mid-sentence. He said, John, there are no fastball counts in Japan.
That's exactly right. I mean, I actually suffered a little bit of some velocity loss, you know, over my period of time over there because I was into the off-speed stuff so much, you know. But at the end of the day, for me, it was about performing and about winning and about competing. And you know, you got to just find a way. You know, I came up through the minor leagues as a player learning one way, and I left Japan a totally different pitcher, you know. I think it's a good thing. I think, you know, people don't realize how difficult it is to pitch over there. You know, the guys in Japan, you know, ground ball to the left side of the infield, you know, 8 out of 10 times they're safe because they run a hard 90 down to first.
Yeah.
They don't just assume they're going to be out, you know. So, you know, as a pitcher, you're pitching with guys on base a lot more. You know, your pitch counts are running higher because they're making contacts more. They're fouling balls off. And, you know, when you get two strikes, you know, in a lot of respects, it's a little more difficult to pitch over there because they're putting the bat on the ball a lot more. You know, you're pitching with guys on base a lot more pressure. You know, so it's good.
All right. Well, last question. We'll let you go after this. You know, I always complain that camp starts too early. It's more like winter camp here in Japan, and, you know, it's too long. And what do you think about the difference between the spring or winter camp they have over here and the spring training they have in the States?
You know, for me, it did start early, maybe a couple of weeks earlier than the Major League camp starts over here. But I think where it gets long is it gets long on the back end of spring training because you have that first month where it's the actual, you know, at the facility, you know, in southern Japan with the team for the first month. Well, then you go back to your home city and you start playing games, and the games are run exactly like the scheduled games. And even though the spring training games, you know, they want to win those games as well as much, you know, and they don't really count on the record. And so when the season begins and opening day starts, as a player, you're already a month into it, really.
Right.
So I think that's where it kind of gets long. You know, the first month, the mornings can get a little long because the stretch is longer. You're running a little bit more. You got a, you know, an hour of stretch, you know, before the day even starts, and that's where the days can kind of get long. But, you know, I think as a whole, the bigger picture is it gets longer towards on the back end of it because those games, that second month of spring training, don't really count on the record. But, you know, they're running the games trying to win just like they are during the season, you know.
The practice games that they have, and they start out with these practice games and inter-squad games and all those things, and then finally they start the preseason and you travel around and everything. It starts to feel more like a Japanese baseball season. But like you said, it's the second month.
Exactly. Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Well, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us on the show.
No problem, John. I appreciate you reaching out.
And we'd love to have you back another time, and we'll talk to you about some of the young players you're helping to develop and who we think we'll be seeing in the major leagues. We place Josh Johnson up there.
from what I hear, it sounds like he's going to be there a while. I don't know. We'll see.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot for joining us. Really appreciate you waking up early in the morning.
You bet. Take care.
All right. Thanks. All right. Thanks again, Jeremy, for joining us, man. It was a good chat. Thank you for waking up early. I know it was 7:30 over there in the morning.
Wow.
So, yeah. But he said he gets up early, so, you know, no problem.
Well, I hope, yeah, thanks to Nicole and Tyler, and I forget the name of his youngest, but they're all beautiful family over there.
Yeah.
Hope they're all doing well.
Now, what caught your ear? What did you pick up in the interview?
Well, I was kind of I enjoyed the stuff about Japan, of course, and I think the big thing to me, I'm not certain that they want to win more. Japan is certainly more hyperactive Japanese baseball is more hyperactive. You know, it's go 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 go, never stop until everybody drops. So that's certainly true, and I think as a player you have to tune in. You'd have to be lacking senses not to tune into it. As far as becoming the changing the style of play, yeah, that's, you know, we talked about that all the time, and Jeremy's is maybe the best example of a player whose career was really made. Well, so many players' careers have been made here, but his career was made here because it turned him into the pitcher. It returned him to his core skills, which was throwing his breaking ball.
Mm-hmm.
He had been a big guy, and he said essentially the coaches in the minor leagues in the U.S. told him, you're a big guy, throw your fastball, work on your fastball, build up your velocity, and that's going to be your game. That's what's going to get you to the major leagues. And he carried that until the Kintetsu Buffalo's pitching coaches were looking at his curveball and said, why don't you throw that curveball more? It's dynamite.
Right, right.
But he became this dominant ground ball pitcher with his throwing his curveball.
Well, there were a number of things for me that caught my ear, but the biggest was the emphasis that he said that the Giants put on winning. You know, they were intent on winning, and the intensity. Those things were big for me. That kind of gives you a window into why there's so much pressure on players to perform, you know, on and off the field for the Giants, and maybe why some free agents go there and they struggle because, you know, they've been used to playing one way, and they do that. And I'm sure the Giants have a way of changing things, like, you know, the no facial hair and all that stuff, and changing guys' names and all that stuff. But the off-the-field part was the one that caught my ear because
they changed their names?
Well, you know, Powell went there. Michael Nakamura used to go as Michael, and they made him go as Nakamura. They changed your registration name.
He was Michael.
I thought he was M. Nakamura as a Giant. I can't remember.
Well, perhaps, but I don't recall that.
And then Jeremy went there. He was JP, right? Not just Powell.
Perhaps. That was kind of a more recent thing. No, I think the names, they did change. They did change. He changed. I don't know if he was forced or not. I don't think they really. The Giants don't have guys who use their first names, at least not Japanese guys. So
yeah,
that would be true.
But I mean, you know, it's that kind of strictness, and then the off the field stuff where they, you know, they ask. Obviously, I mean, you know, not everybody. Not everybody is great off the field, or I shouldn't say great, but the social.
Sounds like too much information.
Yeah, well, let's not even go there. But I mean, you know, it seems like they try to control how the players act off the field, and you know, they're representing the Giants.
Well, they're paranoid. I think there's a high level of paranoia involving the Giants that some, you know, they have more to lose than any other team, and they expect more from the players. And so that's that. I mean, Tuffy certainly felt that when he was with the Giants. And so, yeah, there's that, too. I have to agree with that. And I think, to me, the thing, obviously, he knows a lot about how being a success and being a failure with the Giants feels, because he got the, when he came back from his, he had surgery, I believe, and he came back and he couldn't win, and they basically, he was persona non grata.
Right.
I mean, he was the invisible man. It happens when the Giants have decided they don't want you. They don't want anybody to know about you. They want you to disappear.
Well, I mean, and that seems like a major factor, though, as to why, you know, some teams are successful and other teams aren't. I mean, they put a high emphasis on winning, and they want people who can help them, you know, get to the goal. And if you're not helping, you're an enemy. You know, you're hurting. And I understand it. I mean, you know, I might not agree with it, but I see.
Well, that's certainly the case more, you know, since Hara became the manager.
Okay.
Than it was before, because the Giants used to be kind of a country club for, you know, it had become a not a country club. I mean, the work ethic is always there, but the Giants became a you know, just a farm of famous old players for a while.
Yeah, and that's not good.
No, and people would be, you know, they do whatever they wanted. I mean, they would work hard. So, you know, everybody worked hard, but they do whatever they wanted and just stay in the game. And I mean, the best examples of that was Kazuhiro Kiyohara and Yoshinobu Takahashi. And I mean, Kiyohara was a fairly useless player, but he was a big name, and he worked hard, and he was a fan favorite, so it really didn't matter. They had a manager who tried to get rid of him, and he lost, the manager lost the battle.
Yeah.
And Haro is the first manager who could ever bench Takahashi for just not hitting. I mean, not for, you know, bench him because he was hurt, but he sent him to the minors when he didn't hit. So that was, Powell was probably familiar with that. That was a new thing. Haro is not like a former Giants manager, so it's right. A little different dimension.
Well, I mean, and I see it. I see, you know, they want to win practice games. They want to win preseason games. And, of course, when they get into the regular season, they really want to win when it counts. And I have to be honest, I think that's the way to go about it.
Well, I think so, too. I don't know. The question is, and I guess we were talking a little bit about preseason games and what their value is, yeah, you know, it depends on what you're trying to get out of it. The Giants, you know, you always want to see the players playing to win.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody knows in spring training that the games don't count.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that contradiction in terms. I mean, you had the great case of Hiroki Kokubo breaking his leg in a March 20th exhibition game, and the Hawks not paying for his rehabilitation because it happened in an exhibition game.
Right, go all out, do everything you can to win, but then they turn their back on the player.
Yeah,
and
and that's why he ended up with the Giants, because it left a bad taste in his mouth.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, so that is certainly true, that intensity. I'm not certain it's so much an intensity in the games. I mean, with the Giants, he certainly felt that. The Giants have that. The Giants and the Tigers too have that aura, you know, win at all costs. But I think it's the point that stay busy, don't waste time, work hard, even if it's meaningless working hard, and that just goes on a long time before the season, especially right before the season when they're playing about three or four games a week,
yeah,
and the rest is just practice and it's just mind numbing.
Yeah, well. And, that was the other thing that JP talked about that caught my ear, was how long it gets in the preseason.
Oh, yeah. I don't really know what to do about that. It's just that the manager's point of view is they always want one more day. Every manager wants one more day to evaluate his talent. He wants one more day to see two players he hasn't seen together. He wants to see what this pitcher, you know, oh, this team's available to throw a practice game. If they're going to throw pitcher A, I want to see what this guy does against his kind of pitches.
Right.
So there's never enough time to prepare, because if the preseason went on for 6 months, it wouldn't be long enough to prepare as much as you could. Therefore, they love the managers. They love the long spring training. They love the long preseason.
Yeah, but you see what he said. I mean, it gets long that second month. You know, they start out playing the inter-squad games and the practice games and the preseason games, and then that second month. And then all of a sudden, because he said they run those, you know, the preseason is run, and they're treated just like regular season games. So
sure. And there's no sort of, like, built-in rest. Like, there's less focus on pretty much when camp ends. I shouldn't say that's true. You know, it's much like in the States, where every player has a different agenda. Every manager, every coach, every player has a different agenda for each game. And it depends a lot on where their position is, how secure their jobs are.
Yeah, jobs. That's another thing. I mean, you know, the young players are working hard to earn a spot,
sure,
and the veteran guys are pretty much penciled in, and they have to do something pretty much wrong for them not to even get a chance.
Well, yeah, they're trying. They're not worried about doing something wrong. They're worried about learning. you know, they're trying to make adjustments to this or that, or they're trying to learn something new, rehabilitate, try a different approach, in, you know, some aspect of an approach that will give them another weapon for the season. So they're failing. You know, you hear these interviews in spring training, and they're just bizarre.
Well, they're senseless.
They talk to the player in a inner squad game in February. They say, "Well, you were 2 for 3 today. You must be in really good form." It's just, "No, I was just trying to hit to the opposite field today, and I got pitched that way, so it was it just more or less fit the plan I was working on. It didn't mean anything." Yeah. "Oh, but you must be good to get 2 hits." Like, no, it wouldn't have mattered if I got 1 hit or 2 hits or 3 hits, because that's not the point.
Yeah, the reporters are even worse. They got to get into shape, too. It's their spring training, too. They ask
take some
a lot
of the editors and whack them over the heads is what they ought to do.
Well, I mean, they're actually asking worse questions than they do, if you can believe this, than they do in the regular season. So they got to get into shape so they can ask their normally bad questions when the season starts. They're working their way up.
Or down. Gosh. Yeah, it's pretty painful. It's pretty painful, some of the stuff they expect. And I don't put all the blame on the reporters, because so much of it is from the editors who think that that's what the readers want to read. And nobody thinks, nobody who gives it much thought would think that. So anyway, yeah, spring training is fairly intense, and there's a fair amount of stupidity going on. But again, that's some of that is like I said, at the media level as opposed to the team level. But the Giants are intense. A lot of the there's and no coach can say we don't care whether we win or lose in the spring training. You know, it's one of the things you don't say.
Mm-hmm.
So things get taken the wrong way.
Now, there's some new guys, too, who are trying to make names for themselves, including, I guess it's John Boker. He's with the Giants, and he's hitting like .419 so far. But now we've seen this a lot, too. Foreigners come over, imports come over, they have a good spring, and then the regular season starts, and they're not hitting. And, you know, we've seen it, and we don't know why all the time. But I've been trying to look and see it whenever I've seen the news, see what pitches he's hitting and where the location is, and you know he's hitting .419, but he's had a lot of cookies to hit, and he just hasn't missed them. But I mean, it's stuff like that when you know you guys are working on stuff, just like you said, they're working on, you know, weaknesses and strengths, and the pitchers are trying to get, you know, into shape, and they're not locating, you know, they're just trying to get their arms ready.
Well, what they're not doing is they're not trying to adjust to specific hitters.
Right.
If you're a pitcher, you're not concerned with what the other guy's doing, because it's the issue. You're not gonna, you know, you're gonna make the club based on what you're doing. And you know, if they start hitting it like a, you know, like an old the old beating, you know, like an old futon or something, then you're not gonna get a job. But the point being is, if you're a regular pitcher, if you're established, then you're just trying to make sure, you know, you're locating your fastball. You've got enough command of your secondary pitches that you can start the season. And if you're going out there to work on your slider, it doesn't really matter too much if the guy tags your fastball. You know, it's not what you're working. You know, it's a footnote.
Yeah, and I bet, I don't know, I haven't asked, but I would bet they have a script, you know, that they're going to throw certain pitches to left-handed batters or left-handed power hitters, and they're going to throw some pitches to right-handed, and that's what their script is. And
That's certainly one explanation, I think, for the way it happens, and the same with the batters. I mean, it's sort of like batting practice that's less scripted.
Yeah.
So it's hard to make much of spring training, but however, you do have the other factors that people do win jobs in spring training, and the other thing about spring training games is, well, it's not that they're meaningless; it's that they are more meaningless. What happens are more meaningless than, or less, or quite a bit less significant than what we see in the regular season. And the reason they're less significant is because there's always these different conflicting agendas. And to be fair, most of the managers can say they want to win, but that ain't the truth.
Right.
They want guys to work. They want to get guys in game shape for opening day, but it's really not priority. And when it's not a priority, it means that the results have to be taken with a grain of salt. And that goes from, you know, from the first pitch to the last out.
Yeah. So we got about, what, a month?
We have just a month. We have, today is 27. We have just a little more than a month.
So I don't really put a lot of stock in the preseason games, so I'm not blogging them. I'm not watching them.
But I'll tell you, but having said that they are much less significant,
uh-huh.
If you see a team just demolish everybody in spring training, the reason they're probably demolishing everybody in spring training is probably because they're better than everybody else.
I don't know. I don't put any stock at all in preseason games.
I'll tell you, if you see a team that goes 16-0,
I don't care. That's me personally.
You cannot care. There's no obligation for you to care. But I'm saying that at some point, that's saying something. Now the question is, when is it telling us something? I don't know.
Yeah.
But you do see teams that have outrageous spring training records. In my opinion, will tend to do better than they're expected to do in the regular season. These records don't happen a lot, but it does happen. And the reason they're winning a lot is because they're better.
Well, I mean, you know, the Bay Stars, I think it was Saturday, won a one-run game over the Giants. I don't care.
I don't care either because it's one-run game.
Yeah. I mean, but they won the game. I mean, you know.
Right. Well, that's irrelevant.
Well, unless it adds up to if they get 16 or something in the preseason, then it'd be relevant.
I would say if they won 16 games and they're winning them all by 3-4 runs, yeah.
Okay. You didn't say that before. You just said a 16-0 record, but you said demolishing. You did say demolishing, but I don't know.
Would be almost is something that's so bizarre.
Anybody
who says no, they can't exist just doesn't know the numbers.
Yeah, I don't think that's you know a zero, but I don't think it's a 10. You know,
I
don't know what it's going to tell us, but I still don't care.
There are people who say, oh, well, they won 7 games in a row in the regular season and think that's important, which I would tell you it's not. For a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
But yeah, if a team wins lots and lots of games, now that would catch my attention. It happens very rarely. I've seen it happen a couple times in the majors. I've seen it happen a couple times in Japan, and those teams tend to do surprisingly well.
Well, that game between the Bay Stars and the Giants, I mean, the media, they said it was like the Japan series. There were so many media members to see Nakahata and Hara go up against each other as managers. So
who cares?
They do.
Well, the fans certainly do.
And they acted like it was the actual first game when it's just a preseason game. It was amazing. I'm like, you guys, this is a preseason game. Stop it. Yeah. But again, grow up, get a clue. I mean, you know, this doesn't count.
I do want to say that to these people. But, you know, where it usually matters, where spring training usually matters, is what you want to look for are guys who are established, who have established their value as hitters in the minor leagues,
mm-hmm.
who haven't had jobs, mm-hmm. but never cool off in the spring. Because these are the guys that are going to get jobs. These are the guys, and my favorite two examples are two of my favorite players from the last 15, 16 years would be Takeshi Yamasaki.
Mm-hmm.
And
Dragons,
always
Eagles,
we'll talk about
it
in a second. Yes. Okay. Anyway, just to put it, you know, he just couldn't break the lineup until he was so hot that the team was unable to get away with sending him back to the minors.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with Shima. They just devoured the preseason
and they
were both 27 when this happened, and Yamasaki won the Central League home run title that year, and Shima won the Central League batting title the first year that he had a chance to regularly play. So when you see a guy who has really torn up minor league pitching for a year or two,
mm-hmm.
and they are on fire throughout the spring. That it doesn't tell me anything, but it tells me that they're going to get a job.
Yeah.
And that they may get enough of a look that they'll have a chance to succeed, because what they've usually lacked in the past is enough public awareness of their abilities. The games they're actually playing in are not important, but because they're treated as important, the manager can't turn around and say you're no good when he's telling, you know,
exactly.
when he's saying that he is good.
That's illogical. I understand that.
Okay.
All right.
Anyway.
So, yeah, that's our talk about preseason games and preseason all that stuff. Let's talk about the new managers now. We got four of them.
Yes.
Who do you think is going to have the best season or the most impact on a team? And there's only one of them who has experience. And, you know, I'm looking for a lot of things from these guys. Let's start with Kiyoshi Nakahata of the Bay Stars.
Well, Nakahata. I spent a lot of time trying to figure out who this guy reminded me of, and I finally settled on the player he's most like is Shigeo Nagashima, his former manager,
mm-hmm.
and the guy he was originally groomed to replace, not right after him, but a few years later. He's a charismatic kind of a.
Don't say clown, because I already said that.
Okay, he's a charismatic, energetic fella who says funny things, who does funny things, he's a cheerful guy. They called him a mood maker when he was the Giants, and he was about the dumbest player I ever saw in my life. But
I think you mentioned the Bakahata nickname for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well. I really don't know what to think of him. Now, the question with the Bay Stars is, what do they want from him? I mean, what do you want from this guy? And the question is, with Kudo, when they didn't bring Kudo in.
The lefty pitcher.
That's correct. Kimiyasu Kudo still wanted to pitch. His still wanting to pitch, I think, was not the hang-up as much as being told by general manager Shigeru Takada that the manager was going to have no input on player acquisition and coach selection.
Right.
And I think Takuda said, well, why would I want to be manager for?
Yeah.
Okay. And, I guess if Nakahata is going to be the manager, that's where you want him to be the manager, where he has as few input as, a little input as possible into the team's outcomes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I've seen him on the news already, and I tell you what he is. He's energetic. He's bright and cheerful, like you said. But already he's unlike any manager I've seen with that team in that he's out there. He's yelling at players. He's getting them motivated. It just seems like he's plugged in. You know, he's got this battery pack, and he's juicing up all the guys. You know, he's going from player to player.
That's just like having had influenza, so it's pretty amazing.
And I don't know. I don't know if that's what they need. I don't know if they need somebody who's more of a teacher, if they need somebody who's more of a, like you said, the mood maker that they say in Japan. But it seems to me that that's what he's doing. And that's a positive step. Now, he doesn't get to pick his coaches, which, you know, like you said, the input is not there. And it's a good thing probably because he'd be too busy, cheering and punching the sky and, you know, slapping guys on the butt and, you know, he's too busy to make decisions anyway.
Well, I'll tell you an interesting thing. I mean, one of the things that I do that I think he will benefit from the following. One, he's radically different from his predecessor.
Exactly.
And
well, predecessors. I mean, you know, everybody's they were dark and gloomy. There was good.
Well,
they stood
I would
on the
say
bench.
The last two.
Yeah.
The last two.
These stoical looks, and they didn't. They weren't emotional. They weren't happy. They weren't sad. They're just there.
Well, Dusty Yamashita wasn't like that. He didn't do any better, but he wasn't like that. But Obana was a gloomy fellow. Kind of a taskmaster. And this will be different. Change is always good because players respond to change. And having somebody who's a cheerleader is going to be a real change. Now, whether it helps or not, it can't hurt. Having him be different, it can't hurt. Now, if he has a quality staff and he works well with them, and they are able to figure out plans and stick to them and make decisions, you know, if he becomes a leader, which I doubt, but it's not impossible. Yeah, they could do okay.
Well, I see.
He's never going to be a great manager, but he could be competent to some. You know, he could be good enough to help them.
Look, they don't need a great manager to go from sixth place to third or fourth. Fourth probably, but not. I mean, you know, not. They don't. They just need somebody who changes something, and he's changing the culture of losing. And it's baby steps, and I want to believe that they're going to take some of those steps. But, you know, the first thing is get rid of all the gloom and doom and all that stuff. And he's doing that. And, you know, they did beat the Giants the other day. It was a good win for them. They came back. They came from behind to do it late in the game. It was good for them. I don't know that, again, it doesn't count, and it's not worth all that much, but they got it done. And although I think Tsutsugo got injured, and they thought he was going to back clean up for him. I think he broke a bone somewhere. I wasn't really paying attention, and he's going to be out for 3 weeks, so he might make it back in time for opening day or maybe not. We'll have to watch that one. That's bad. That was bad news for him. But anyway,
probably,
I mean,
probably help him in August when he's less burned out.
That could be, but because he's never played a full season, right? So,
right.
We'll see how he goes. What about Yu Takawada of the Hanshin Tigers? What are you looking for from him?
You don't know. I mean, Nakahata was a batting coach briefly for Nagashima. He got fired when the Giants didn't do well 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
Wada was a longtime batting coach for the Hanshin Tigers for eight or 9 years.
Yeah.
And he's a very thoughtful guy. I can, you know, and here's where I can relate. You know, as a reporter, he's a very thoughtful guy. He answers the questions succinctly, and he seems organized and fairly humanistic as coaches go. Craig Brazell said credited him with helping him just switch off the negatives. You know, and just, you know, this is your style. Focus on what you do right, and don't worry about the, you know, the little things that are byproducts of that. You know, focus on your core strengths. So I like that. You know, it doesn't tell you anything what kind of a manager he's going to be. I think Mayumi was able to do that a lot as well. So I don't really know. I don't know how he's going to be different. One of the things that is kind of interesting is a lot of new managers who come in who are successful are successful farm managers.
Right.
And I would say, just to pick a few of them, Nashida, who was successful with the Buffaloes. The team got a lot better when Nashida was promoted to manager because he brought this wave of talent that had been suppressed on the farm team up with him.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with Hisanobu Watanabe, the Lions.
Right. And so,
Akinobu Okada, the Tigers, same thing. They had this big pressure building up in the minors. The exit valve for the minors league's players is fairly limited. You know, it's whatever the manager feels like when he bothers to think about it. But this guy was down there, no one who could play.
Yeah.
So they do well. Now, Wada's been the first team, but here's the kicker, is that Mayumi was very good. The Tigers are in a situation where they've gotten very old in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
They had Yano and Kanemoto and who's another guy who was fairly old?
Shimoyanagi.
Those three. Jojima is no spring chicken. Well, Hiyama's ageless because he never plays, and it's okay that he's, you know, 50 years old. But I love you. I love you, but that's, he's not going to be a regular. He could still go out and play about five innings in the outfield, and he wouldn't ruin your season. But anyway, so the question is, how are they going to get young? And Mayumi, I think, answered the questions. He had a couple of young guys playing, a couple of young outfielders. I think and their names escaped me, but
Shunta, I can't remember his last name.
Yeah, anyway, I was sitting at a Tigers game and with the Futoshi Nakanishi, the Hall of Famer from the Nishitetsu Lions, and he said that he was talking about these guys who just take these young Tigers who can fly and take big swings, and I think they reminded him of him. But he had really high hopes for them. These guys got good bat speed, and they're 22, 23, 24, in that range. And they got a lot of playing time last year under Mayumi. And Wada's in a position where, A, he doesn't owe anybody anything.
Right.
And this is where the new managers come in, is because they can say, look, you're on the bench. Hey, you over there are not doing anything. You're a starter. You're going to be the captain or something, whatever. You can do whatever crazy stuff you like because – you've got free reign. You got free license for a while.
Yeah, now one of the guys was Shunsuke Fujiwara.
Right.
Who's one of the quickest. Wada's like the youngest of these guys. He's like 43, and he's really close to, he's closest to the...
He's younger than Kanemoto, though.
I thought Kanemoto was 42.
I'm saying that.
He seems younger, that's for sure. But, I mean... he's been a coach. He's right along with these guys. My question for him is can he separate himself from the role he had played up to now and tell guys like Kanemoto, hey, you really hit well off of left-handers last year. I'm going to play you against some tough left-handers instead of sitting you down. He's going to tell guys like...
That sounds like a tough decision, telling the team's most popular player you want him to hit. You wanted to play
against Utsumi? I mean, he's a tough left-hander. I mean, if any time he wants to sit down, it's going to be against those guys. Perhaps. He's got to tell guys like Takahiro Arai, hey, look, I'm sitting you down today. You haven't been hitting well. Or you haven't been doing this well. He's going to have to do something with Jojima. We want to play you at first base as much as we can, but that means we have to put Brazil in the outfield like they did the other day, and that doesn't make us better. You're sitting down, and he's going to have to take these pitchers out of games. He's going to have to put pitchers in games. Of course, he's going to get help from all of his coaching staff, but
in the end,
he's got to make that decision himself, and I want to see him... make the decisions with conviction and get those guys, what happens the next outing after he's yanked and what happens the next outing after he sat a guy down or pinch hit for a guy. I want to see the reaction of those things.
Yeah, well, that's like anything else. The leadership is a factor that you really can't, it's really hard to judge from somebody who's been a batting coach. I mean, of course, the best batting coach will exhibit leadership as well, but the demands are much higher on a manager. So yeah, it'll be kind of interesting. You really want to see him do well because he's such an articulate fella, and the Tigers have a great deal of Tigers are kind of a funny team. They have this great pool of knowledge, the difference between the Tigers and the Dragons is not the talent of the players.
Mm-hmm.
But the organization and focus of the staff.
Mm-hmm.
The Tigers are all these really knowledgeable coaches who are allowed to just give free rein to whatever they want, without a lot of central control.
Mm-hmm.
Now Ochiai did that too with his coaches, but he also kept them tight to a central plan. This is what I want you to accomplish.
Exactly. Yeah.
And if he wanted to do something, he would take them, he would communicate. What he would do is he'd fire them at the end of the year.
I think he was really good at communicating to his coaches what he wanted them to do. And they knew they had to do it. And he wanted a free exchange of ideas where, what do you think we should do on this? And I think they were really, I think that's what made it. I don't think it was all OTI, but I do think that there was a central plan, and essentially they executed their plan better than anyone else because I don't think they had the talent level.
I see stuff the Tigers do when I was doing all that research last summer on the Road Trip of Death, and all the stuff the Tigers coaches told me and all the data I saw led me to believe that they're just doing silly things because they're certain it's not going to cost them. And the manager was going, okay, well, just go ahead and do what's silly because you know better than I do. Right. And they need a manager to come and say, look, hey, this ain't working.
Yeah, look at the numbers, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, I mean, look. What the pitching's, you know, the road, the travel, the all the travel days is a problem, and our pitchers are getting worse every August. Well, why don't we do something about that? Why don't we change the pattern? So, you know, change something, do something different.
Well, we'll see what he does. Now, what do you think about Takagi with the Dragons? I mean, he's coming back for his second. It's just a second stint, right? Because I don't know if he.
It is exactly his second stint. He was there for 4 years, 1992 to 1995. And I was interested. Your impression at that time was that they were a big hitting team.
Well, I mean, yeah, they had big hitters. I think he rode those guys. I mean, they had Imanaka, yep. They had Yamamoto, and then they had Genji Kaku,
yeah.
And they rode those guys in with the arms, but it was mostly because they scored runs. You know, Alonzo Powell was a 3-time batting champion in the Central League. Taiho was a home run champion. Yamasaki, as we discussed, was a home run champion.
Yamasaki didn't even play for them hardly.
Well, he eventually became one, yeah, but yeah.
After
he left. Yeah, after he left.
Takagi was the guy who wouldn't use him.
Right, and who else? Who else did they have? I can't remember one of the other sluggers.
They had Ochiai.
Yeah, Ochiai was there. Anyway, they were a big hitting team. Yeah, they had big bats and all that stuff, and they had power. But I didn't remember anything about, you know, in particular about the pitching staff and how he handled those guys. But I just know that they scored a lot of runs, and I think he probably was more of an offensive minded manager. I don't know.
I would say the opposite. I would say the number of runs they allowed was very few. The number of runs they scored was not all that. Was not significantly high. I think he would sacrifice offense for defense. And I think that explains why Yamasaki really never played for him, although he was, one could just be stupidity and ignorance, which is always, you know, you really can't discount completely. But the thing is that he was... had a guy who could really hit. I mean, and it's not like he wasn't hitting when he came up. He hit when he came up. He hit when they sent him down. It didn't matter. He hit whenever they gave him a chance, and he just found excuses to send him back to the minors. Now, with Taiho, I mean, he had the perfect opportunity to use him when Ochiai became a free agent and went to the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't. You know, he just, you know, kept them the same as, you know, the best minor hit league, you know, the best hitting minor leaguer in Japan.
Right.
So, anyway, he was that kind of pitcher. He did, he was that kind of manager, which is not surprising. He was a second baseman. He was kind of a crafty fellow, speedy, no power. He was a defense first guy. He rode his pitchers probably a little harder.
Mm-hmm.
Then he rode his pitchers harder than Hoshino would ride them. And he did essentially, you know, these guys who had been working heavy load, you know, fairly heavy loads, went into even heavier workloads, and he pretty much ruined them.
Yeah.
It's hard to say if he ruined Imanaka. Imanaka was already well on the way being ruined by Hoshino, but he got more work under Takagi. Yamamoto got his heaviest workloads under Takagi. Genji Kaku was, you know, it's hard to say he ruined him because he was a workhorse under Hoshino as well. So, he really didn't make any noticeable players. He really didn't develop anybody in 4 years. The exception being Shigeki Noguchi, who had his first regular year in the rotation, and then he was useless for a couple of years.
Yeah. Well, do you think they're going to be more offensive minded, or they're going to be similar to what they've been in the past? I mean,
They're going to be similar to what we've seen. He's not really going to. I don't think he's going to change. He's not going to change the Dragons' makeup too much. I can't really see him making acquisitions. It's going to depend on. They have a lot of talented defensive players. I think they're going to get playing time. Takagi before kept the team kept the team the same.
Well, you know, they're pretty old. You know, they're starting to get up there. I mean, you know, Araki, what is he? He's 34 maybe, I think. And then Ibata's 36. They signed Motonobu, what's his name? Tanishige, the catcher. He's 41.
Yeah. They're going to have to get rid of these guys eventually. But, you know, I don't think Takagi's going to be around any longer than they are.
Yeah,
I think they're just keeping him around until somebody says, hey, why don't we let Tatsunami manage? That would be a good idea. The fans would like that.
Well, Tatsunami and also Kazuki Inoue, who's moved up, I think he's going to be with the big team this year on the bench.
He was a minor league manager last year.
Last year, yeah. And I saw him on the bench on a newscast, so I think he's with the top team now. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we'll have to see. You say they're not going to change him. I think, you know, they're going to, with Kawakami coming back, if he's really healthy and the rotation is going to be good, Soto is still with them, and he pitched well for them at the end of last year. So they could hurt people with their pitching if they don't score runs, though. If we see anything like we saw in the Japan series where it was wisdom teeth extraction, to get a run.
Well, he's going to be different from Ochiai, and that's a plus. Whether he's better than Ochiai is highly doubtful. It's hard to, you know, get rid of the best manager in franchise history and hope that the next guy is going to be an improvement.
Well, he might be better, he might be worse. I don't know that actually shows up in the win-loss record per se.
No,
but
it will not.
But
it will not.
We'll have to see how he plays. I mean, you know, they might score more runs and lose more games. We don't know. But, yeah, let's see what kind of difference he makes. What about Hideki Kuriyama with the Fighters, our only Pacific League new
man? Well, he's I don't know what you do with him. He was a TV. He wasn't your typical analyst. He's not the guy who sits there and watches all the games. He's not the guy who sits there and watches all the games from the broadcast booth. He's the guy who reports about them on TV.
Yeah.
And he interviews players and does features and goes to camp and says, hey, this guy's got a really great swing this year. And
he's really good with the media. No surprise.
I'm surprised. They'll be like, wow, what are you doing on the other side? What are you doing in uniform this year? So, right. You just don't know. It's a wild card. He's never managed. He's never coached. He was I don't want to use any pejoratives because I really enjoyed watching him play as a Swallows fan when I was just becoming a Swallows fan back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Because he made great diving catches, but he had the worst range of any center field. He was a guy who could make the best diving catches in Japan, and he had the worst range of any outfielder in the Central League.
Yeah, you had to dive.
He couldn't get jumps. He had no arms. He was a single hitter who never walked or hit for power. He couldn't steal bases. He had no real arm. He had no real talent defensively. He was like a player who, as soon as he got to the big leagues, I'm sure he tried hard, but whatever he tried was misdirected because he just... He didn't exploit the advantages that baseball allows you to exploit.
Right.
You know, it's like somebody told him the best thing to do is be a high average singles hitter who can play center field, and he was all of that. He just wasn't, you know, he wasn't going the next step to try to, he, you know, his game just never got any deeper.
Right.
So,
well, he's going to a team that's lost Darvish. They've got Termell Sledge back. So, Bobby Keppel told me he thinks the team is going to have a little bit more power, which is good. You know, they're going to need that. But, what does he really have? I mean, he's got this softball player who's a catcher, Oshima Takumi.
Yep.
And he's swinging well in preseason, but again, I don't put much faith in that. The kid looks like he might even get a spot on the team for somewhere. I don't know what he's going to do. I don't think he's ready to catch yet, these guys, but we'll have to see. But, I mean, you know, can they go up from where they went last year? I don't know.
They finished second last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, they have an amazing amount. They have the Fighters have a couple of things. You know, if the Fighters had hired Nakahata,
let's just say if the Fighters had hired Nakahata, then I would have said, well, they have a plan, and you know they're gonna, this is what they want from him, and this is who we're gonna bring up, and they're a very solid organization, and they can, you know, there's, it's not just about the manager.
All right. Well, we'll see. We will see. One other thing I wanted to talk about was the bat. There's a rule change with the bats. They're going from a maximum diameter of 7 centimeters at the barrel of the bat to a maximum of 6.6, so down 0.4. Now, the thing that you can do, you can keep the same weight, so you can distribute the weight throughout the rest of the bat.
Right.
But what do you think?
Or use denser wood if it's possible, which is, would be ideal.
Yeah. Now, what do you think that's going to do to the bats? I mean, I talked to a couple guys. One who said, well, guys are going to have to square the ball up a little bit better on the bats. But the change is so minimal. It's not that big a deal.
Well, I was, you asked me the other day about this, and I was really struggling to think of an answer. And there's a couple of things that could happen. One is if the weight of the bat is distributed and the bat's barrel is, the ratio of the barrel to the handle is not as severe as it was, you'll probably see players getting more Texas leaguers and bloopers and such, balls that might have broken bats before becoming a little, you know, little dinky contact hits. That's a possibility.
Yeah. Well, one of the guys said he didn't think that it's going to make that much of a difference at all.
I don't think it's going to make much. When I was trying to research it, I was the most interesting thing I found was from a bat maker in the U.S. talking about the advantages of different bat designs and characteristics, and it was saying that essentially smaller barrels will give the ball more backspin because the curvature when it hits the ball is sharper. The ball is the bat.
I got you. I got you.
There's less flat space relatively. The smaller the circle is, you know, the less the bat curves more. This is a sharper curvature.
If you square it up, yeah.
Right. If you square it up, right. If you square it up with a larger bat, the ball is more likely to knuckle. Is what they were saying because it might just hit exactly square and go straight without any particular rotation on it. In which case, it's not going to travel as far.
Personally, I think we might see fewer broken bats.
I think that's the example of the first one. Now, the other one is the possibility that if the bats are actually going to decrease in mass, then the ball will probably not be hit as far, which is would be the worst thing possible thing. Let's see, what else can we make the game to take more of the offense out?
Well, we'll see how it plays out, and maybe we'll talk to somebody at MPB later about it. But the other thing I wanted to talk about was the MVP vote or the MVP situation in the United States in the National League. Ryan Braun of the Milwaukee Brewers had his 50-game ban overturned, which means your boy...
My boy.
Your boy, Mr. Norichika Aoki.
If he was my boy, I'd put him up for adoption, dude.
But yeah, Norichika Aoki is really going to have to prove himself from the start of camp to even earn a spot on the team now. That outfield is crowded, man. It's going to be tough for him.
Yeah, well, maybe Tony Plush will adopt him.
Tony Plush isn't going to give him any of his outfield minutes.
No, he'll be like...
Adopt him.
He'll be like... Plush, like give him a plushette uniform or something. give him his old ice skates.
He's not going to give him anything. Plush or Morgan, either one of those guys. Well, you know, tough break for you, dude. Sucks to be you. See ya. You know, and pick up my bags and carry them over there, rookie. You know.
Oh, man.
I do admit, though, that, you know, some guys go over to the States and they put these goofy uniforms on. I shouldn't say goofy, but, you know, different uniforms on, and they look terrible in them. But Aoki looked really good in his Brewers uniform. It's too bad he won't get to show us.
We'll see.
I mean, Darvish looked really good in his Rangers uniform, too. I was kind of surprised. I thought it was going to look, you know, it was going to look funky or just be funky to see him wearing that Rangers uniform, but he looked good in it.
And we're all in funky fighters uniforms. It looked like he survived. So
with the gold, which ones did you not like? The gold.
The ones that looked like they had little bra straps on each shoulder.
Oh, come on. Now you're just being silly. It must be late into the night. We got to go, guys.
And I didn't even run a marathon today.
Oh, yeah, my marathon. Thanks for bringing that up. 4 hours, 21 minutes, nothing to... No, thank
you. We're all proud of you. We're all famously amazed.
Well, I'm amazed I was able to do it with a bad heel. I don't know what's wrong with this thing. I'm going to go get an x-ray or something to find out what's wrong with it. But I got through it, you know. It was
good
it
job.
Was fine. It was. I wish I had a better time, but, you know, I had a couple injuries. So I made it through. I didn't have to stop other than taking a bathroom break. So that was good. But anyway, we're going to do shows on, let's see, what was the schedule that I sent to you? March 11th and then I think March 25th. Will be our next shows, and we're going to break down the Central League first, and
yep.
then the Pacific League, and make our predictions. So we'll talk to you when we come back. Any comments you want to send to us or questions, you can send via email or MP3. Send them to YakuJohn, that's YakuJohn at gmail.com. And I won't give out Jim's personal email address because we.
Thank you.
But you can hit us on the.
Because I don't get all the spam in the world there yet, so.
But you can send the emails to there, or you can hit us up on Facebook and.
Absolutely. And please record your voices so we can hear you as well.
That was so cool last time. I really dug those questions, and they were good questions. I don't think we spent a lot of time answering them, but I don't think we spent enough time answering them. They were good questions.
You're here.
All right, guys. So we'll be back in a couple weeks. Thanks a lot for listening. Take it easy.
Thank you.
Enjoy your spring season games. Spring? Oh, yeah, it's going to be spring soon. I guess that's all I have to say. Take care.
All right,